Welcome to Ag Matters, covering the positive agriculture stories from across Alaska with your host, Amy Pettit of the Alaska Farmland Trust.
My guest today, Director of the Division of Agriculture, Arthur Keyes. And I just want to give a little shout out to Radio Free Palmer for the incredible fundraiser that they had the other night, featuring the super saturated sugar strings, which was so much fun. So three cheers about that. And secondly, a quick reminder to folks that Oktoberfest is coming up on October 7th. That's two Saturdays from now. And tickets are moving super fast. There's less than 100 tickets left, and we don't want you to be the one that misses out because you didn't get a ticket. So go online, brownpapertickets.com, search for Oktoberfest, and get your tickets for that incredible fundraiser for the Muskox Farm and Alaska Farmland Trust. And that is enough about that. Arthur, you're not here in the studio with me this morning. Why is that? Where are you? Where have your travels taken you?
Well, first off, good morning, Amy. Good morning, Mike. Thanks for having me. I'm not there, am I?
No.
I think I've missed a couple invites from you to be there.
Yeah, busy guy.
I have been doing a lot of traveling lately, and this hasn't been missed by my 11-year-old daughter either. She's been wondering where her dad's at.
Yeah.
You know, Amy, I think with all the opportunities Alaskan agriculture has, I think it's really important that as the representative, the government representative, that these farmers, are going to see the most visibly that I'm actually visible and I'm actually listening to what they're saying, hearing how their season's going, hearing how they're, how this industry's doing. And so I have been, I'm currently in Homer.
Okay.
Got here 2 days ago. And visiting with farmers, just getting out there and seeing what's going on. And last week, a week ago, I think I had to tell you I couldn't make the show because I was in Delta Junction.
Yep.
Again, out on farms there, and just really getting an education for myself about what everybody's doing, how they're doing it, how it's different from the difference between Homer and Delta is just incredible.
Sure.
I'll give you an example of the farm I was on in Delta Junction last week, or at least one of the farms I was on. 17,000 acres.
What?
17,000 acres. And we, he's growing, and he's producing feed for animals here in Homer. He's producing feed for animals all over the state.
Okay.
But he took us out in the field, and he has three combines sitting there, and got a picture of this. And it's amazing because it's a picture you'd expect to see out of the Midwest.
But sure.
These combines are 30 feet wide, and they run them in when they're harvesting the grain, the cereal grains,
yeah,
just like they would in the Midwest. They're harvesting 90 feet wide. On a section of the field, 90 feet wide
at a time. Yeah, that's an incredible thing to watch. You should send me that picture, and I'll put it up on the page for people to see.
Absolutely, can do that.
Very good. So, what we don't have this. Our time goes by so fast, and we got a little rough start this morning. But so, what are you hearing from producers? Like, how has it been a good season for folks? What are you hearing from people?
I think the season. The season itself has been cool. Has been a cool season.
Like awesome cool or?
Say it again.
Weather-wise cool or just cool?
Yeah, weather. Sorry. I'm sorry. Let me clarify.
I've had
that.
More coffee than you this morning. Sorry, Arthur.
Yeah, unfortunately, I haven't had any yet. And I hope we can still communicate with each other. But
it's been temperature cool across the state.
Temperature cool, rainy and cool. And so I think the numbers are going to be down a little bit.
Okay.
But regardless of that, I'm hearing a lot of optimism and a lot of excitement.
Oh, good.
I think the local food movement, we have a food hub down here in Kenai that, if you're not aware of it, the Kenai Peninsula Food Hub, that's exciting. That's giving farmers another outlet, another opportunity to sell their products.
Right.
Another opportunity for consumers to see what's available, so if they can't make it to the farmer's market, they can they can go online and see what the farmers have to offer and purchase things through the web.
Yeah.
And so that's an advancement. Up in Delta, you know, it's interesting. I've heard so many times that, you know, these failed farm projects. And yet when I go to Delta Junction and I see all the activity that's happening up there, I don't think failed farm projects. I think maybe the message hasn't been clearly enunciated about what is going on.
Sure.
And so it's exciting for me to see it. I think the farmers are excited in the growth potential of what we're doing. You know, I know you've had Rochelle Plummer on from
yep.
Mattsu Farm Co-op.
Yep.
And she's talked about the growth in the number of egg producing chickens as well
yeah.
as meat birds.
Yep.
Well, this farm that I was on in Delta, they're producing pelletized chicken feed from barley and peas and oats and cereal grains.
Okay.
And it's you know, there's excitement there because those pelletized chicken food is going all over the state, and the demand's there. When I was in the barn where they bag up all this chicken food, he said it was one third full, and it's a great picture to really show you what kind of scale we're talking about here. But it's a really big barn, and it's mostly empty. And he just said they haven't had time to keep up with the demand.
Oh wow, well, that's good.
Yeah,
that's a good sign.
Exciting stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Speaking of Rochelle, I was thinking about her last night because I was having an all Alaska grown dinner. Salad and potatoes and broccoli and then store-bought chicken. And I felt really bad that I didn't have one of Rochelle's chickens. So I need to get on that and get some of those in my freezer. So speaking of sales and potential and things like that, we've talked about it before when you were on the show, and I've seen some action about it in the newsletter. And impressively, in the grocery store the other night at Fred Meyer, at every checkout stand, there was a little Alaska-grown $5 challenge, like, flyer at the self-checkout stand. So talk to me about the $5 challenge and how has that been going? What good news has come from that?
The $5 challenge is going fantastic.
You it know, ends you, soon, been, right?
It's what?
It ends soon?
October 31st.
Okay, so we got another month.
Yeah. Let's just assume it's still September, though. Let's not jump ahead
right, sorry.
Into that snowy month of October.
Yeah.
So we actually have to. but Amy, you've done marketing campaigns before.
Yeah.
And so you're aware of it takes momentum. It takes time.
Yeah.
It takes
money.
Doing it over and over again before you really get some traction.
Yep.
And what I would say about the $5 challenge, and you know me, my background, I've done marketing for my whole life, really, my whole adult life. I've been marketing and selling, and to have a marketing campaign like this $5 challenge take off and be embraced by the retail sector as strongly as it has,
yeah, it's been
in my mind is just incredible.
Yeah, it'll have a long lasting impact, I think, beyond October 31st, and probably even into next year and beyond. People will remember this. They'll see the logo. They'll think about those yellow bags and that $5 challenge. It's kind of incredible to watch these things grow over time. It's like the chef at the market event that we created years ago with state dollars. And, you know, Clayton was here, my guest, last week, and he's still doing these chef at the market type activities because of what happened. I mean, it was like 10 years ago when we first started that. So I think it'll have a long lasting impact, and I'm excited to see the results. And so ultimately, there will be a winning retailer. Is this correct?
That is the plan. Yep.
Yeah.
And I think we've been compiling photos, and retailers have been sending photos in. And whenever I'm out here and traveling, when I get the chance to stop in a store, I will, and I'll take a look at what they're doing.
Okay.
And document it, and we'll compile all that, and we will come up with a metric to have a winner.
Yeah.
And the winner is going to be involved.
Okay. Well, I was just going to say, even that level of communication between a state agency and retail grocery stores is such a huge positive change. I can tell you that when I worked there and we would try and get in touch with the retailers to talk to them, just even to ask them, can we get you any more stickers or can we get you any more twist ties? Getting a call back from one of those guys was so rare because they're so busy and they've got so much going on. The fact that you are hearing from them that it's top of the mind awareness about this program, about, you know, promoting Alaska Grown, again, that in and of itself will have a huge impact.
Yeah, that communication is incredible. One of the head guys for Safeway, for example, he'll shoot me a text and say, hey, here's what we did this week.
Yeah.
And he's proud of it. And
that's
so
awesome.
It's awesome.
I want to interrupt you. Oh, yep, go ahead.
But, we can't finish this $5 challenge segment off without saying this. I got photos, feedback that Safeway has now shipping Alaska Flower Company all of their variety of mixes to Juneau.
Oh, and, awesome.
Yeah, and they intend to have that product in all 24 stores in Alaska.
That's great.
And that's never happened before.
Yeah, no, Juneau, we always get complaints from Southeast about how they can't get Alaska grown products, and our producers are like, shipping it down there is doubles the price, and there's all sorts of issues. But anyway, I want to quickly interrupt this thought, Arthur, to remind folks that you are listening to Ag Matters Radio. I'm your host, Amy Pettit, and on the line with me this morning is the State of Alaska Division of Agriculture Director Arthur Keyes, who's joining me on the line from Homer. And Arthur, we'll just keep chatting, but I think our second guest is going to call in here shortly. And we're going to address one of the hot topics happening in the ag industry right now, which is the potential removal of sheep and goats from what's called the clean list. So we won't jump into that till the phone rings and Susie calls. But so apart from you getting around the state and visiting lots of farms and the $5 challenge, what else is going on at your level?
Another exciting thing that's happening is Anchorage School District, one of the largest kitchens in the state that produces 30,000 meals a day during the school season.
Yeah,
they are incorporating some Alaska grown products into their lunch program. And for everyone, just a producer that's on the phone, on the line listening in, October 24th, they want to hear from producers and hear about what people can provide, what farmers can provide to them, so they can increase their Alaska grown menu items.
Wow.
So that's,
well,
while that's never happened before either.
While you were talking, Arthur, I think Susie joined us on the line. Susie, can you hear me?
Hi, Amy.
Hey, good morning. Thanks so much for being there. I just want to finish that thought with Arthur about the Anchorage School District expressing interest in buying more Alaska-grown products and wanting to hear from producers. So,
yeah, that's awesome. Go right ahead.
Yeah. So what does that mean, Arthur? How do they want to hear from producers?
Well, I think at this point for this late October meeting, I would encourage producers, if you want to participate in that or know more, to reach out to the Division of Agriculture. And I think Jody Anderson is the lead on this. So
okay.
She'd be the person you'd reach out to and say, hey, I want to learn more.
That's super exciting. Anchorage School District is the largest production kitchen in the state of Alaska, serving tens of thousands of meals a day. And so an opportunity to get your product into that market would be incredible. That's a big move. Cheers to Anchorage School District for making that effort. And again, Arthur said Jody Anderson is the contact for that opportunity, and the meeting is October 24th. All right, Susie Crosby has joined us on the line this morning. Susie's also calling in. I know it's a busy morning for her, but let's talk about this potential removal of sheep and goats from what's called the clean list. Susie, what does all of that mean?
Well, starting with a little bit of background, in late 2015, the Wild Sheep Foundation filed a proposal with the Board of Game asking the Board of Game to remove goats and sheep from the clean list under the suspicion that they could possibly bring diseases to wild sheep. Now, bearing in mind that there have been no studies done on thin-horn sheep, which is what our dall sheep are.
Okay.
All the studies that they're basing their suspicions on have been done on bighorn sheep in a situation where open-range grazing with large commercial flocks in the Rocky Mountain West has been linked to diseases that have caused herd die-offs in the bighorn sheep population in the lower 48.
Okay.
So taking apples and oranges, they propose that as a preventive measure, that sheep and goats be essentially banned from Alaska. Taking them off the clean list would mean that they would be illegal to own. Part of the proposal, I don't know if you have you read the proposal itself?
No, I've just read some of the bulleted language that's been pulled out of it.
Okay, so the proposal itself says remove sheep and goats from the clean list and require a permit for possession with stipulations. If located within 15 air miles of all sheep habitat as follows, domestic sheep and goats, any person must obtain a permit from the department. They don't say which department, and the truth is no department is able to issue a permit for an animal that's not on the clean list. So it's a catch-22.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
They're also saying animals located within 15 air miles of doll sheep habitat must be contained within a department-approved facility, double fence, and be certified disease-free.
Wow.
It's extremely over the top. I think it was intended to be sensationalistic to really catch people's attention. It's completely unrealistic, and even in the discussions that we've had over the winter, the representative from Wild Sheep Foundation has admitted himself that language was pretty far over the top.
Pretty aggressive.
Very aggressive. And anyway, so it really caught the attention of the local farming community because there's a ton of sheep and goats up here that, you know, throughout Alaska, so many small homesteads, it's just they're the perfect homestead animal, whether for milk, meat, fiber, or a combination.
Yeah. So the Alaska Farm Bureau, I know, has been staying right on top of this, kind of taking the lead, created a working group, trying to have open communication with the Wild Sheep Foundation to help them modify this proposal, if not remove it. I just want to point out that the director of the Alaska Farm Bureau, Amy Seitz, was not available to be our guest this morning to talk about the issue. I also reached out to a couple of the veterinarians involved, and due to travel schedules and restrictions on public outreach, they weren't able to be with me today. Now, that doesn't mean that we won't be able to have a more comprehensive show about this topic later in the year, but I want to thank you, Susie, for being willing to come on the show this morning and kind of briefly talk about the issue. And you yourself are a producer, right? So you've been right in the thick of this.
Yes. My husband and I own and operate Cottonwood Creek Farm, which is we raise registered alpine dairy goats and have a herd share operation.
Okay. And Arthur, you're still with us on the line?
Yep. I am.
So talk to me a little bit about the State Division of Agriculture's perspective on this and how you guys have been staying involved.
So ultimately, from a regulatory standpoint, we don't have any involvement from that standpoint. From supporting an agriculture standpoint, we are involved in helping coordinate the meetings and participating in those meetings. Eric Johnson, he's taken the lead on this. Unfortunately, we don't have a lot of staff at the Division of Agriculture, and Eric has graciously agreed to do it. He's following it. The trouble is we just don't have the regulatory authority. Your regulatory authority is going to be, the way I see it, the way I read everything, it looks to me like the Bob Gerlach really ultimately is the one that needs to step in here and say, this is my authority, my purview, and from a statutory standpoint, this is how I see it.
Yeah.
And I don't know that the Fish and Game, and I think the Fish and Game may feel a little awkward about the whole proposal where it's kind of reaching outside of their statutory authority to, go into the livestock world.
The Fish and Game's official position, and this is quoted from their website, is to take no action on this proposal because the board's statutory authority is limited to game and feral animals. It does not have authority to regulate domestic goats.
Okay.
So that just adds to the unrealistic aspect of the whole proposal.
Okay.
Yep.
So potentially, I mean, I don't want to say it's a non-issue because it's a big issue if the proposal were to go through and action were to happen. But it kind of sounds like what you mentioned, Susie. I mean, there's research on bighorn sheep, not on doll sheep. We've never had an instance of some of the diseases that they're talking about here in Alaska. There's no proof that our Alaskan domestic sheep and goats carry these diseases.
And as a matter of fact, Amy, we're proving that they don't. We've instituted a testing program. Now, going back to 2016 again, NAPCA is the North American Pack Goat Association, and they were being threatened with the loss of wilderness areas due to, again, Wild Sheep Foundation's suspicion that they might be carrying diseases to bighorn sheep. So they set about to prove that they were not an issue, and with a grant from the USDA and a testing facility at the Animal Disease Research Unit in Pullman, Washington, they set about to do a fairly comprehensive and complex series of testing. It was a three-part test with tests done monthly for 3 months, including a nasal swab, a blood draw, an ocular swab, and just going above and beyond.
Yeah.
The one thing that they're specifically looking for in the disease agent that is of concern is called Mycoplasma ovi pneumoniae, or usually referred to as MOV for short.
Okay.
And so MOV doesn't necessarily kill the animal, but what it does, a mycoplasma is neither a bacteria nor a virus. It's its own little unit. And mycoplasma do not have a cell wall. It's just kind of, think of it as kind of a creeping slime.
Okay.
And so what this slime does is it coats the cilia, which are your little soldiers in your, you know, in your respiratory passages. And those cilia are what trap the, they're the defenders of the body's systems. So the ovi pneumoniae, or MOV, coats those cilia, makes them lay down. And then when the next thing comes along, like the Manhamia hemolytica or whatever the disease agent is that causes pneumonia, then the sheep are susceptible to it, and that's what kills them.
Okay.
Anyway, so the test is specifically geared to MOV, and the testing is in progress right now. Dr. Gerlach has not released. The results are slowly coming in because it's a time-consuming test.
Sure.
But as of August 30th, we had a meeting. It was a public meeting in which he announced that of the first 100 tested, only one had shown up positive.
Oh, wow.
So, again, going back to the PatGoat Association, their final results in the final published study was that 576 animals were tested, and out of those, 6% were determined to be positive. All of those were located on 5 premises out of the total of 83. So it was very minimal, very contained. And based on those findings, the Wild Sheep Foundation's head vet, who's Dr. Tom Besser, published a statement in the Wild Sheep Quarterly magazine, and that statement read, "This expected low prevalence of carriage of MOV by PatGoats is currently being tested through a program. Oh, if this low prevalence is confirmed, and unless new information to the contrary arises, I believe that MOV test negative PatGoats represent a negligible risk for triggering pneumonia outbreaks in bighorn sheep, and that it would be reasonable to take this into account when setting public lands policies."
Oh, very good.
Because yeah, so Dr. Besser himself says,
yeah,
hey, if they're negative, you know, if there's an extremely low prevalence, this is not an issue.
It's not an issue.
So
because
So based on the strength of that test, we have gone ahead and done started to follow the exact same testing protocol as the three-part test. And,
yeah.
And it's in progress. So
okay.
It's the results are very promising so far, but the study's not done or ready to be published.
Okay, so those 100 animals that you mentioned, those numbers with Dr. Gerlach, that's actually happening here in Alaska?
That is happening here in Alaska.
Okay,
the numbers of submissions are now up to about 300.
Very good.
And so our percentage, based on an estimated total of approximately 2,000 sheep and goats in Alaska, that represents a pretty healthy sampling.
Yeah.
You know, significant sampling number. And so we just need to wait a little longer for those results to come back. But I think we have no reason to think that those results won't continue to be stellar.
Right.
And probably be better than the lower 48.
And correct me if I'm wrong, don't the animals have to get nose-to-nose for transmission to happen?
You know, there's so much that's not known about MOV transmission.
Okay.
They need to be in close proximity. It's
yeah.
It's called an environmentally unstable disease agent. In other words,
okay,
if a sheep sneezes and another sheep walks by 10 minutes later, it's not going to be an issue.
Right.
So, yeah, they have to be pretty close, whether it's nose-to-nose or whether, whether a sneeze could, whether it could aerosolize is not exactly known, but it's... Of course, the Wild Sheep Foundation thinks that to be safe, every sheep and goat in Alaska should be contained behind a double fence 50 feet apart.
Right.
I mean, most people wouldn't have enough room on their property to...
Yeah, and 15 air miles within the Dall sheep range covers a lot of the state.
That covers most of Alaska, quite
yeah.
frankly.
Yeah.
And in our talks, we did get them... The agreement was reached that the air miles thing was, when you have natural barriers, that becomes a non-issue. Like,
non-issue.
You know, there's sheep on Turnigan Arm. Well, the people, if somebody's raising goats over in, you know, across the water, that serves as a significant
barrier. Yeah.
But the reality is that the whole clean list thing, in reality, it would not change the fact that people are going to continue to own sheep and goats. What it would do would be put them into a very uncomfortable no man's land.
Sure. And the restrictions.
Doing something that's now declared illegal with no way around it. Because the statement on Fish and Game's website says, if a particular mammal or bird or reptile species does not appear on the clean list, it may not be imported into Alaska or possessed as a pet or livestock in Alaska, and the Department of Fish and Game cannot issue a permit allowing its importation or possession.
Okay. Well, definitely a hot topic, and we'll stay tuned to listen for more. I would encourage folks to watch the Alaska Farm Bureau's website for additional information about meetings and opportunities to express your concern. I think that the Board of Game is taking comments right now. And again, head to the Farm Bureau's website to learn how to do that. Arthur, Susie, my time is up this morning. That 8 o'clock
Amy,
bell is about to ring.
One more thing.
Sure.
Comments are due by October 27th in anticipation of the meeting in Anchorage on November 10th.
Okay.
And
perfect.
I would encourage everyone to put in their comment and attend the meeting. You will be able to testify in person. Everyone can have 5 minutes.
Okay. Very good. Thank you so much for that, Susie. Again, Arthur and Susie, thank you for being my guests this morning on another edition of Ag Matters Radio. And thanks for joining me, and we'll talk again.
Thanks, Amy.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Ag Matters, covering positive agriculture stories from across Alaska with your host, Amy Pettit, of the Alaska Farmland Trust. Ag Matters is a production of Radio Free Palmer, recorded at our studios in Palmer, Alaska. For more information about this program, email manager@radiofreepalmer.org.